Portions of the following program are transcribed.
The Traitor Within.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jimmy Stewart speaking. And before we begin this very special program, I'd like to issue a few words of caution. If you're easily frightened when confronted with the awful truth, well, then you're not going to like this program. You see, words have different meanings for many people. But there's one word that means the same thing to all of us. No disguising it. And that word is cancer. We all know what cancer means. Cancer is the traitor within.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with your American Cancer Society, presents The Traitor Within. This is a program dealing with the known and the unknown, the seen and often unseen, the plus and the minus, of a disease so vicious it strikes a blow at one out of every five Americans. Who will it strike next? Ladies and gentlemen, your narrator for the next 30 minutes is Hollywood's Mr. James Stewart.
I didn't mean to sound like an alarmist a few moments ago. I didn't mean to scare you. That isn't our intention, not at all. We personally don't intend to frighten any of you, but we think the truth of this matter will. And frankly, we hope our story will do some good. Now, we've got approximately 30 minutes in which to discuss a very vital subject with you. 30 minutes is not nearly time enough, but that's all the time we've got. Now, we'll discuss the past, the present, and a glimpse into the promise of tomorrow. In fact, it was only yesterday that this subject was sort of taboo in local society. Did I say sort of? I mean definitely taboo. For some strange reason, people just didn't dare discuss this subject among themselves. Now, recall a mind, if you will, you older folks. Recall the way the news of Aunt Ethel's death was usually hushed around the neighborhood. It went something like this, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, Grace.
Yes, Flora.
Guess you heard the news about poor old Ethel McBride, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did, Flora. It's quite a shock. But I guess it was to be expected, poor soul.
Suffered a long time, she did.
Uh-huh.
Wonder how the family's going to take it.
Oh, I imagine time will heal their grief.
No, I didn't mean that, Flora, not at all. I meant about the way she died.
The way she died?
Uh-huh. Haven't you heard?
Well, no, tell me.
Well, now you know me. I'm not one to talk, and I wouldn't want this repeated.
Naturally.
The family had to admit it, finally. Ethel died of a lingering illness.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
shocking, ain't it? I mean the shame and all.
Shocking? Yes, it was shocking, but not for shame. Shocking because man, even with all his infinite wisdom, was helpless to do anything for Ethel. Lingering illness? Yes. That was one polite way of revealing the reason of her death. There are other ways, too. Now, this scene took place in the general store.
Howdy, Murray.
Well, hi, Fred. How you be?
I'm fine.
What do you have?
Just a short order today. Bag of feed and a quart of coal oil.
That all?
Did you hear about poor old Ethel McBride?
No. What about her?
Passed on this morning about 4:30.
Well, for gosh sakes. Why, the poor thing. Well, guess it was for the best, though. I know she's been ailing for a long time.
Well, yes, she has. You know what she died from, don't you?
No.
Doc Ramsey read it down on the death certificate. I seen it with my own eyes. Cause of death, malignant tumor. Of course, you know what malignant tumor means.
Malignant tumor. Now I ask you, why did people try to disguise it? What were they afraid of? Well, we can only guess that it was because it was an unknown quantity, and cancer was certainly an unknown quantity.
Ladies and gentlemen, cancer is still an unknown quantity.
Well, that's the subject we're going to discuss. And we're not going to try to disguise it. It's been disguised for too long a time. If you'll forgive me for the use of this time-worn term, we're going to call a spade and not something else. Okay, then the first order of business is to find out what cancer is. Well, there are a lot of good ideas floating around as to what it is. And just to give you a vague idea of what the men of science are up against, we've asked one of the country's leading cancer authorities to make a few brief remarks. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Ian MacDonald, a member of the Cancer Committee of the American College of Surgeons.
The first thing, and probably the most important, is to consider the fact that cancer is not a single disease. It's a very complex group of many diseases. And each individual member of the cancer family is different from the other. Cancer varies greatly in its multiple forms. It's not one disease, it is many. Right now, we're led to believe there may be as many as 300 different types.
Well, that's a frightening figure if I ever heard one. Not one disease, but many. Well, then it only stands to reason that there can't be any one cure for cancer. It's possible there may have to be many cures, as many cures as there are types of cancer. Well, now, what are we doing about this disease of cancer? A lot is being done about it. Some of the good that's being done you know or hear about, and some of it you don't. What was done yesterday? What's being done today? How about tomorrow? Here's something I bet you never knew.
Hippocrates, in 375 B.C., knew about cancer. Records show that he made a study of cancer and described and defined certain forms of cancer which exist today just as they existed back in those days.
That's amazing, isn't it? Hippocrates knew about cancer. Now, here's a startling fact.
In 38 A.D., a man named Celsus developed a really definite attack on one of our most common cancers, cancer of the breast. His attack was surgery. Somewhat the same as is used today in attacking cancer of the breast.
Well, that was 38 A.D., 1,915 years ago. Now, let me give you another fact. It was 38 A.D. when Celsus performed the first successful surgery of breast cancer. Yet the next important development in the control of cancer didn't take place until 1824, 1,786 years later. Now, that is shocking. This very important development took place in Paris, France. It involved a man named Raspail.
Messieurs, please, if I may have your attention, please. Thank you. I've called you here today because of a most important demonstration.
What is it, Raspail?
It concerns a microscope that I have been working on.
A microscope? What kind of microscope?
I will show you. Dr. Bonner.
Oui?
Dr. Bonner, would you be so kind as to step up here on the platform, please?
Oui.
Thank you, Dr. Bonner. Now, monsieur, the reason I called Dr. Bonner is that I know his opinion is respected among all of you. Now, early this morning, I had some cancerous tissue removed from a patient. I placed some of this tissue on this slide. Dr. Bonner.
Oui.
First, I ask you to examine this slide under this microscope, if you please. Merci. Now, Dr. Bonner, please examine the same slide under this microscope. A microscope which I have worked on for almost 3 years.
Oui. Yeah. Oh. Oh, mais c'est incroyable. Oh, that is amazing.
What is it, Dr. Bonner? What do you see in the microscope?
Monsieur Raspail, I cannot believe what I see.
The microscope does not lie, Dr. Bonnet.
What do you see, Dr. Bonnet?
No.
Tell us, what is it?
Monsieur, unless this is some kind of black magic, Monsieur Raspail has made a most important discovery with his microscope. Very unusual. Unless I am mistaken, his microscope shows that the growth of the cancerous tissue resulted from the multiplication of cells.
That was 1824. Yet it took another 20 years to definitely prove that all cells grow from pre-existing cells. Cancer is the growth of cells gone wild. It is the wildfire spread of the patient's own abnormal cells.
And the scientists learned something else after Raspail's discovery. They learned that the cancer cell never ages. It never dies as normal cells do. The cancer process has eternal youth. It's primitive, savage. It preys upon its useful neighbors. It invades tissue in greedy, grasping groups, destroying as it advances.
It works its way through the walls of lymphatic channels and blood vessels and is carried by the bloodstream to far parts of the body, where it homesteads and gives rise to new cancer colonies.
The traitor within. It's the only known unwelcome guest who commits suicide by destroying its host. Well, it was the turn of the century, and the men of science were finally beginning to build a pyramid of defense against this deadly scourge called cancer. In 1933, another major step forward was taken. In Pittsburgh, a Dr. James L. Gilmore, an obstetrician, developed a peculiar chest cough. He had x-rays of his chest taken. The results were positive. Dr. Gilmore had cancer of the left lung. As a medical man, he knew the only hope lay in immediate surgery. He wrote a letter to one of his former classmates in medical college, Dr. Everts Graham, a noted chest surgeon practicing in the city of St. Louis. And a few weeks later, he went to see Dr. Graham personally.
Well, how is everything, Jim? Family and all?
Good, Ev, good. Everything's just great, except, of course, for...
Yes, I know.
Hope I didn't make the trip for nothing, Ev.
Well, I thought about your letter a lot, Jim.
I'm glad you did.
I don't know what to tell you.
You don't know what to tell me? I don't want you to tell me anything. I want you to do.
To say is a lot easier than to do.
Look, Ev, I've got cancer of the lung. We both know what that means. You're one of the finest chest surgeons in the country. 2 + 2 in my medical book equals surgery.
If it were only as simple as that.
20 years have separated us, Ev. But I know what you've been doing. I know about the experiments. Well, you've made a successful removal of the total lung.
Yes, I have, Jim, on animals, but not on humans. I don't know that the operation can be performed on a human being.
Well, then consider me the guinea pig.
Oh, I can't do that, Jim.
You've worked a long time, Ev. This could be one way of proving your experiments.
I couldn't allow myself to experiment with a human being.
All right, Ev, you've got principles. We've all got principles. Mine are no different than yours.
Oh, please, Jim.
Look, let's be a little brutal about this. What happens if we don't operate?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You know as well as I do that the most I've got is 6 months, maybe a year.
Perhaps.
There's no perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, what do I stand to lose? Nothing.
I'm sorry.
But, Ev, if the operation is a success and I've got all the confidence in the world in you, then there is something to gain.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Please, Ev. Ev, please give me the chance.
All right, Jim. I'll operate.
Without any loss of time, Dr. James Gilmore headed for surgery.
On Thursday afternoon, April 5th, 1933, in St. Louis, Missouri, Dr. Everts Graham performed the first pneumonectomy of cancer of the lung in medical history. He removed the entire cancerous lung of Dr. James L. Gilmore.
Was the operation a success? Well, Dr. Gilmore lost one lung, but that was 20 years ago, and he's alive today, still practicing medicine. Thus, in 1933, did the science of surgery prove that cancer in an organ formerly unapproachable could be cured, but only if it was detected in an early stage. Early discovery is half the battle in the control.